And I did a little bit of introduction about me and my family last night. Hopefully y'all enjoyed the fun picture I showed you of your elder Thomas. But I want to just do a little bit more and just kind of keep letting you all get to know myself, our family. I mentioned yesterday that me and my wife, one of the things we're really passionate about is missions. And as your church is focused on the Great Commission this year, I think it's so perfectly aligned with the mission of our theme of this retreat of One Life, One Mission. And me and my wife, we attend a church in Dallas, Texas. It's very similar to your church. It's a Chinese heritage church. And both of us, for probably the last 10 years, have been two of the mission leaders in our church. And one of the things we do is we go on a lot of different mission trips in the summer. So we will lead teams from our church, different members from our church, to different mission trips. So I just want to share a little bit. You can get to know us a little more, and I can talk about some of the mission trips that we have gone on. And this kind of fits into my lesson today, too. So we've gone to mission trips to a lot of different places. Here's a mission trip we went. This is before me and my wife were actually married. We went to Taiwan, and Taiwan is my home country, and being able to go to Taiwan on different mission trips. This mission trip, I'm showing you a picture here. Here's our team, some of the kids we minister to. We did like a vacation Bible camp for different churches in Taiwan, and they would invite unchurched kids. We promoted it as an English camp. So in Taiwan, we would say we have teachers from America coming to teach English. And even though the parents aren't Christian, you all know Taiwanese, if they can have their kids learn English and it's basically free, they're going to jump at the opportunity. So we teach the kids English, but then we also have the opportunity to share the gospel with them. This particular camp was in Kaohsiung, Taiwan. We've also done mission trips to Taipei and Taidong in Taiwan, and just being able to obviously use Chinese, being a Chinese church, but serve in places here. So that's one of the mission trips we've done. Before COVID, we also went for a few years to Myanmar. So Myanmar in Southeast Asia used to be called Burma. Now it's called Myanmar. Here's a team where we went. This trip, we partnered with a Christian organization, and the pastor that we partner with, he runs an orphanage in Myanmar. So he had about, I think, 40 or 50 orphans that he adopted. In Myanmar, there's a lot of war, a lot of drug, a lot of trafficking, so there's a lot of orphans that need help. So him and his wife, they adopted all these orphans, and they invite these orphans as well as a bunch of other kids around the area, and we do a camp for them. So here's some pictures. It's a very cramped space, but we had a lot of kids there doing different ministries with them, teaching them the gospel. We do songs. Here's some of the kids there. I'll show you a picture of this overall camp. It's a really big camp. So I'll just share a little bit of stories. Here in America, we're a lot about planning, right? When y'all had a retreat like this, you have to register, right? Months before you knew how many people. So our team went, we had about like 8 to 10 people, and we planned for a camp for 100 kids. 100 kids, we had material, we had everything planned. We spent months planning. We get there, we're ready for the camp. The day before the camp, the pastor comes to us and is like, oh, by the way, we may have a little bit more kids than expected. And we're like, oh, okay, that's fine. We were planning for 100. How much are you thinking are coming? And he said, I think at least 250. And we're like, wait, what? 250, that's nothing close to 100. We didn't plan for any of this. But he was like, it's fine. It's good. The more that come, the better. And that's part of the culture there, right? For them, they don't do anything like registration. They just send out an invitation to the whole village, and whoever wants to show up, shows up. So we ended up having to plan. Not really. It wasn't even planned. It was just chaos half the time. But for 100 kids, we ended up switching it to 250. But in the end, I'll share more about it. It's just we see God's faithfulness through all this. It was really funny. At the end of the camp, so it was during the week, on Saturday night, before when everything was done, we're kind of relaxed. And the pastor, we had a debrief. And the pastor, at the end of the night, after we had prayed, we're about to go to sleep, he was like, by the way, I'm really looking forward to your sermon tomorrow in our Sunday morning service. And I was like, excuse me? Well, I'm preaching. And he was like, yeah. Of course, you're going to preach. And I realized in that culture, it's not really a planned thing. It's just, oh, you're here. Of course, you're going to preach tomorrow. And there was no like preparation before. So I had to stay up a lot, basically that entire night, preparing a sermon to preach on Sunday, even though he didn't ask me. That was my first experience of this. Now, every time I go on a mission trip, I always have a sermon ready. So then now, like when we go, we went to Indonesia too. The culture is like that. So now when the pastor is like, oh, I'm looking forward to your sermon, I'm like, oh, very excited to do it. And he doesn't know I've already got one prepared, right? So that's just part of the culture there. I also asked him, so how long do you want the sermon to be? 40 minutes, 45? He was like, what do you mean? I was like, how long should I preach for? And he was like, there's no long. Just preach until you're done. So for their culture, again, it's if the pastor's up there preaching for 3 hours, the sermon lasts 3 hours, right? So again, you see a lot of different things. I think one of the things about mission trips, especially cross-cultural mission trips, is we learn so much. You experience so many different things. You realize how people live in the world, the things that are different. But I think it really opens up a lot of experiences and a lot of learning opportunities for ourselves as well. One of the trips we've done the last few years is we've gone to Indonesia. So I share my wife is from Indonesia. So we've, in the last 3 years, our church, and we've led our team, a team from our church to Indonesia to share the gospel Indonesia. And this is the first time we've actually could bring our kids on mission trip too. So you see, here's a picture. This was a trip from 2 years ago, and Josiah and Micah came with us on our mission trip too. And it's been a great joy to be able to go on mission, not just as me and my wife, but also with our children as a whole family. For Indonesia, for those of you who don't know, Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world, has the largest Muslim population. So 2 years ago, here's a camp we did where we partnered with this missionary in a Muslim town, and we did a lot of ministries. We did this family ministry with these Muslim families. And it's very interesting. When we were in this Muslim context, we can't really be open about the fact that we're doing a Christian camp. So it was more a camp about purpose, about potential, about worth, and we kind of promoted it that way. But then obviously when they came, we brought in the gospel. But you have to be a lot more careful, because in dominant Islamic culture, if you're actively doing Christian things, there can be a lot of persecution, a lot of danger in those things. So this was the Muslim camp that we did. Here's my wife. Obviously, she's Indonesian, so she preached and she shared the gospel in this camp. This is her preaching, really powerful gospel sharing. When I had to teach, because I don't speak Indonesian, my wife is my translator. So she had to do basically all the teaching, and also she had to translate all our team members as well. So this was me preaching at their local church Sunday service. I'll share this. The good thing about having your wife translate for you is she knows me the best, right? She knows basically everything I'm going to say, so I don't really have to explain things. When I say stuff, she knows how to translate it. The downside is, because she knows me that well, if she doesn't like what I say, she's just not going to translate it that way. And she's just going to say, I remember I would preach, and I would say something like a one sentence, and then she would talk for like 2 minutes. And I don't understand what she's saying, but I'm like, clearly you didn't just translate what I said and you added a lot of other stuff. And then I'd be like, what did you say? She's like, don't worry about it. It's good. And basically, it just keep going. So in the end, I don't know. Obviously, I trust her, but it was a very fun experience being able to have her on there to translate. Every time I go back to Indonesia and I preach, whether she preaches, obviously she preaches in Indonesian. If I preach, she's my translator. But last year, we also went back to Indonesia. But this time, instead of doing the camp in a Muslim dominated area, we did it in Bali. Have you ever heard of Bali? It's a very famous vacation island in Asia. And Bali is very interesting, because even though Indonesia is primarily Muslim, Bali is a hugely dominant Hindu island. So Bali is like 90% of the people there are Hindu. So then we did a camp for, and you can see these are the children in the back and different families, for Hindu background families. And we're able to serve them and share the gospel with them. It's very interesting, even though it's very close to where we were before, a very Muslim-centered culture, you have to really preach the gospel. You have to be careful, but your goal is just to tell them about Jesus and explain to them how Jesus is the Son of God. For Hindus, we realize it's very different, because when a Muslim, if they accept Jesus, that's a huge step. For Hindus, we realize, and this is one of the things you learn in contextualization and missions, we learned a lot of times when we share about Jesus, the Hindus would be very open and just say, yeah, I believe in Jesus and I accept Jesus. But you have to be really careful, because if you know Hinduism, Islam is Allah is the only God, one God. Hinduism, it's we got thousands of gods, right? So sometimes when we share the gospel with the Hindu and they said they accept Jesus, we have to kind of dig a little further. Because for them, it's accepting Jesus means I got 100 gods on my mantle at home. I just add Jesus and there's 101. But of course, we know that's not what it means to believe in Jesus. It's to believe in Jesus alone. So it's very interesting, because when we went to these different contexts, when we shared the gospel, we saw different kinds of acceptance, but then also different challenges as we shared the gospel. And we know every culture, every context has different challenges. Here in the Bay Area, there's different challenges too with sharing the gospel. So here's our Indonesia mission team that we had last year. Again, we had another family come with us, so Josiah and Micah had some friends. But I want to share some of these mission trips. Our family actually in July this year, so in 4 months, we're actually going to be going to Poland this year and leading a team. We had an opportunity. If you all know, there's a war in Ukraine, right? Everyone knows that. And Poland is just west of Ukraine. There's been thousands and thousands of refugees from Ukraine go to Poland to escape the war. So what we're doing is our church is able to send a team, and we're going to partner with the Ukrainian ministry in Poland, where we'll have about 100 youth in Poland, and they're basically refugees. So either their parents have died from the war or are fighting in the war, and basically they're like kind of orphans right now. And we have the opportunity to do a camp for them, to love on them and share about Jesus with them. So we're actually in the middle of planning for that trip, and it's a lot of different things we're trying to figure out, but we're excited for these different opportunities. And I wanted to share this just to let you know a little bit more about our passion, but also today my message is really going to be focused on this idea of mission and about sacrifice and about going and sharing the gospel. I love the worship songs we just sang, the finishing the task, right? The unfinished task, and about surrendering all to Jesus. This is our theme, One Life, One Mission. So I'm going to be reviewing this every time. I already did this last night. We'll continue to do it again today, but here it is. Let's read it all together. We'll do this every time. Let's read it together like we did yesterday. One, two, three. Knowing the hope we have in Jesus Christ empowers us to sacrifice for the sake of his mission, ultimately bringing us the greatest joy. So last night, I focused on this idea of hope. Hope. How as we have one life, one mission, as we try to live our life on mission in Christ, we first need to remember the hope we have in Jesus. And I use the Apostle Paul's life as an example and showed y'all how his life, how was he able to live that life on mission for Christ? I think it's because of the hope that he have. And for us, if you remember, I mentioned that because as Christians now, we know the ending. We have this hope. It empowers us to live our life today on mission for Christ. So don't forget that. Again, my three messages are building on each other. So remember that foundation of the hope we have in Jesus. And because of the hope we have in Jesus, today, this morning, my message is focused on this idea of sacrifice, of how now we are empowered to live on mission, to sacrifice for Jesus. And one of the ways we sacrifice for Jesus is by fulfilling the Great Commission, by bringing the gospel to those who have never heard, to those in need of Jesus, like either on short-term mission trips or in evangelism in your homes, in your jobs, in your schools, all these different things. So the passage I have for today is this. It's from Romans 10, 13 through 15. Let me just read it. This is, of course, written also by the Apostle Paul, but he says this: "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." If you look at the progression here, Paul actually starts from the back and moves to the front. It's kind of a reverse. So if we reverse it, we see you have to be sent. Someone needs to be sent to preach the gospel. Once someone preaches the gospel, someone will hear the gospel. When someone hears the gospel, then they can believe in the gospel, in Jesus. And then when they believe in Jesus, they can call on his name, and then they can be saved. So we see this progression that God has ordained to send his people out to preach his message, so that those who have not heard can hear, believe, be called, and then they, in turn, go and are sent out to preach. At the end of this, Paul quotes a passage from the book of Isaiah in the New Testament. How beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. This is straight from Isaiah 52, verse 7. The prophet Isaiah writes, "How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns." So today I want to encourage y'all and talk about this idea of living out on mission for God, making sacrifices for God, and giving you all some examples of people that have given their lives, sacrificed everything for God. One of the things we see in the Bible is the word gospel. You all should know this. The gospel means what? Gospel means good news, right? In the New Testament, the Greek word for gospel is euangelion, which literally means good news. But if you do a deep study of the word gospel in the New Testament, you'll find this word euangelion is actually seen in the New Testament way more as a verb, euangelizo, than a noun, euangelion. And I think that's something that should resonate with us. It's this idea of the gospel is not just this thing that's there. It's something to be proclaimed. The good news is a verb. It's something to be announced, to be preached, to be proclaimed. So this verb form, euangelizo. So what I want to do today is I want to share just some stories. And it's Saturday morning. You guys are probably just waking up. Hopefully, I think these stories can help motivate, encourage you as we talk about making sacrifices for Jesus. Yesterday, we looked at the story of the Apostle Paul and his life. Today, I want to actually move out of the Bible and look at some missionaries in church history and see the sacrifice that they made in their lives for God, knowing the hope that they have. And I hope this will encourage you. I'm not trying to guilt anyone. I know we all probably can make more sacrifices. My goal today is just to encourage us, empower us to see these examples of lives of people who have made sacrifices. And then for you to think while you're listening, what is some sacrifice God is calling me today to make for him? Of course, all our lives are different. The sacrifices we make may be different than the ones we hear in these stories or those around us. But I know God is calling all of us in some form or another to one life, one mission, to make some sacrifices for him. So let me go through. Some of these you may have heard of. Some of them may be new to you. But again, one of the things I've found is as I look through these heroes and heroines of the faith throughout Christian history, one of those things, those stories sometimes are the most encouraging for me when I'm down, when I'm struggling. And every time I go through these stories, I'm really encouraged about God's faithfulness and seeing how people throughout history have served him. So there's been countless missionaries through history. Obviously, we can't go through all of them. I picked some of the famous ones in modern day. So this is kind of the modern missions movement from the 18th century on. And we'll just talk through some of them, and I'll share some of the stories, and hopefully you can be encouraged by them. The first person I want to share is this man named William Carey. Not sure if you ever heard of William Carey, but William Carey is very famous. He's known as the father of modern missions. He grew up in the 1700s in England. And I want to share, during this time in England, especially in the Protestant church, there was not a focus on missions at all. It wasn't like today where all believers knew they were supposed to go on mission to share the gospel. This was a period in the church where they just thought, we're just Christians, we just stay in our churches and we do our thing. William Carey really wanted to go to India to be a missionary. And as a young man, he really wanted to do that. But no one else was doing these things. And actually, his minister or pastor at his church, when he shared how he wanted to go to India to be a missionary, his pastor actually rebuked him and says, stop saying these stupid things. Stop thinking these stupid things. If God wants to convert those heathens, he's going to do it without your help or my help. That was the mindset of the church in England back then. It would be like if one of you youth today say, I want to be a missionary one day. And you go to Elder Thomas and Pastor Ben and say, I want to be a missionary. And they're like, just sit down and just stay home and don't be a missionary, right? Obviously, they would never do that. I know them. They're not going to do that. But if they did that, you'd be like, wait, that's horrible. Why would they not encourage you to do these things? But that was the church that was going on back then. So William Carey, he had no support, not much. But because he really thought this was what God wanted him to do, he ended up going to India and becoming a missionary. William Carey has this very famous quote. He says, expect great things from God. Attempt great things for God. Expect great things from God. Attempt great things for God. I love that. So he did go to India. If you read his biography, it was a very difficult life. He made a lot of sacrifice. He had to move around a lot. He got illnesses, got malaria. During that time, obviously, they don't have modern medicine like we do today. His 5-year-old son died while he was there on mission. He writes how he was racked with illness in a strange land, in a different culture, not knowing the language, not knowing the people, and just the difficulties he had to go through. In his first 7 years of mission, he had 0 converts. Just imagine going on a mission field for 7 years and not one person accepting Jesus. Think about how hard that must have been, how discouraging, how challenging it must have been to persevere. But after 7 years, finally, he had his first convert. And once that happened, we saw the Holy Spirit move. And for the next 28 years, there was a great gospel movement through William Carey that spread in India. He translated the Bible into so many different languages, Bengali, Hindi, Sanskrit, and a bunch of different dialects in India. bring the message of Scripture to them. And we really see William Carey as a missionary to India, not just for what he did, but because he kind of was one of the pioneers. This is why he's known as the father of modern missions. William Carey, a man that made great sacrifices for the sake of the gospel. Because of William Carey, this next generation in the 1800s, the 1800s is known in church history often as the Great Age of Missions, this century, the Great Age of Missions. And one of the reasons is because of William Carey's example. And a lot of Christians in the generations after him followed his example and went on missions and made it a normal thing for many churches. One of those men, and you all probably have heard of this man, was Hudson Taylor. Hudson Taylor, the very famous missionary to China. So Hudson Taylor, you can see he was born in 1832. So he was basically the generation after William Carey, also from England. And Hudson Taylor, he had a heart for the people of China. His parents actually prayed for him to be a missionary to China. So he heeded God's call. He made the sacrifice. He went to China. Hudson Taylor, very different from missionaries during that time. Instead of bringing his Western culture in to the mission field, he tried to adapt to Chinese culture. So you all may have heard or seen some of the pictures. He would wear Chinese dress. He grew out his hair with the Chinese pigtail that they would have back then. He tried to fit in to the Chinese culture because he said, I wanted to bring them the gospel and have them be able to grow their church in their own context, in their own culture. William Carey translated the entire Bible into Chinese. He started what is known as the China Inland Mission, CIM. Today, it's the China Inland Missions. They sent over 800 missionaries to China during during Hudson Taylor's lifetime. And now today, CIM has become, you all may have heard, OMF International, Overseas Missionary Fellowship. Now it's a global mission organization. But this was started by Hudson Taylor. Very famously, there was this seven students at Cambridge University that decided to go on mission following the example of Hudson Taylor, the Cambridge Seven. And Hudson Taylor, not just him, but what he did. When he went to China, there was only a handful of missionaries in the whole nation of China. By the time he died, there were thousands of missionaries there. And his heritage is not just his life. I'll share something that's a little bit more personal to me. This is China Evangelical Seminary. If y'all know Hwasun in Taipei. My mother actually went to the seminary. I told y'all I grew up in Dallas, but then we moved in elementary school to Taiwan. So during that time, my mom attended seminary at Hwasun. My school was just right across the street from Hwasun. So she would drop me and my sister off at school, and then she would go attend classes at seminary. But Hwasun, the current president of Hwasun, is this man right now. It was founded in 1970 by James Hudson Taylor III. So that's Hudson Taylor's grandson. And now his great-grandson, James Hudson Taylor IV, is the president of China Evangelical Seminary in Taipei. And we see he's white American, but speaks perfect Chinese. We see the legacy, not just that Hudson Taylor himself had, but now even four generations after, how his great-grandson, his great-grandchildren are also serving God and bringing the gospel to different people. So that's Hudson Taylor. It's really famous. I think all of us in some way, some of us probably without even knowing it, owe some of our Christian heritage to missionaries like Hudson Taylor, who brought the gospel to the Chinese people. So that's Hudson Taylor. Let me share another. I have two more missionaries that went to China. This one she's a little bit less well-known than Hudson Taylor, but this is Lottie Moon. I don't know if y'all ever heard of Lottie Moon. She grew up in Virginia around the same time as Hudson Taylor. So she's American, grew up in Virginia. She was educated from a very wealthy family in Virginia and loved the Lord. And at 32 years old, she had a really big decision to make. She had just received a marriage proposal. She could have gotten married, started a family, lived a very wealthy and comfortable life in Virginia. But instead, she decided to turn down the marriage proposal and go as a single woman to China and be a missionary. And she spent the next 40 years of her life in China as a missionary. She never married. Lottie Moon, she was a very tiny lady. She was only 4 feet 3 inches. 4 feet 3 inches, okay? Just imagine. So very small in stature, but we all know physical stature does not mean she's small in spiritual stature. When she spoke people listen. So she spent 40 years in China. She started a girls' school in China and started teaching different groups of girls, adopting orphans, doing a lot of social service, and of course also sharing the gospel. She did many trips to the interior of China. If you read some of the stories, she's very famous for baking cookies in her home. And a lot of the Chinese kids would come and they would love the cookies that she'd bake. She also adopted Chinese dress, learned Chinese. Her mission wasn't as, in quote unquote, successful as Hudson Taylor. She didn't start a mission organization. But what Lottie Moon did that really influenced the generations after her was she would send letters home all the time detailing her mission. And these letters would be read in different churches in America. And her letters were very influential in influencing people in giving to missions, in going on mission. Lottie Moon, I mentioned, she spent 40 years in China. She ended up dying in China. It was a famine during that time. And because there was not enough food, Lottie Moon, even though she could have had food for herself, every time she received any food, she would give it to the children in her school. It got to the point she was so malnourished and starved, she was only 50 pounds. Just imagine, she was only 50 pounds. And the mission agency eventually said, okay, this is not sustainable. We need to take you back. So they eventually forced her to leave. But on the trip back where she was supposed to go home, she passed away due to malnutrition. And she died before she was able to go home. But we see Lottie Moon, even at the end of her life, sacrificing, loving these children, bring the gospel to them, helping them. The legacy she leaves behind, I don't know if any of you have heard of this, but this is the Lottie Moon Christmas offering. So the Baptist denomination, every year on Christmas, they have this huge mission fundraising and offering that they do. And they named it after Lottie Moon. I think last year I read it was over $200 million donated to global missions. Every year, around $200 million. And this is the legacy that Lottie Moon has left, this Christmas offering in the name of Lottie Moon in order to support missionaries throughout the world. And we see Lottie Moon's sacrifice for Jesus. Again, I'm sharing these stories. Hopefully these people, these men and women that lived their lives for the sake of the gospel, these can encourage you. The next one I'm going to share, another famous missionary. I'm not sure if you all heard of him. His name is Eric Liddell. Eric Liddell, in the 1900s, let me share a little bit about the story of Eric Liddell. Eric Liddell grew up in Scotland. His parents were missionaries to China. So he was actually born in China. He was born on the mission field. And then for school, he went back to Scotland, and he was a very athletic boy growing up. He became a great athlete, a great rugby star at his college in Scotland, and entered track and field. And very famously, probably what he's most famous for is he made the Olympic team for the United Kingdom in 1924. The Olympics in 1924 were in Paris. So the Olympics, we just had a Winter Olympics. I think the next one is here in California in LA, right, in 2028. In 2024, in 2024, the Olympics were in Paris. It was marking the 100-year anniversary of the 1924 Olympics. So he was one of the 100-meter stars in the world, and he was one of the favorites to win the 100-meter race, which is the biggest race in the Olympics. But when he got to the Olympics, he found out that the heats, basically the preliminary races for the 100-meter, were on Sunday. And for Eric Liddell, growing up in his church tradition, Sunday was the Lord's Day. We do not do any work. We do not do any sports. We do not play or do anything on Sunday. That's what he believed in. So he had a crisis of conscience. This is the Olympic Games, once in a lifetime opportunity. He's been training his whole life for this. And just one time, he would just have to run a race on Sunday and it'd be fine. But he stood his ground and he decided, I'm not going to run. When he decided this became news throughout all of Europe. It became all over the newspapers that this superstar athlete says, I will not run on Sunday. It got to the point they had the Prince of England, the Prince of Wales, the heir to the throne, sit him down and say, you need to run for your country. And very famously, Eric Liddell said, God knows I love my country, but I will not run. And he chose not to run on Sunday because his conscience told him this is not something I do as a Christian. So obviously people were very disappointed, but during that time they figured out, obviously he had the government and all the things on his side. They moved him from the 100 meters to the 400 meter race. And if you know anything about the Olympics, 100 and 400 meters, it's a very different race. It's not something that you can just do. But they moved him to the 400-meter race and had him run in that instead. And he ended up winning the gold medal in the 400-meter race and became a star athlete. Very famously, his story. Has anyone, I told you all I love movies, right? Has anyone ever seen or heard of this movie called Chair to Fire? Some of you may have. Okay, so this movie was 1981. It won the Oscar for Best Picture. We just had the Oscars last week, if you all are into movies. But it won the Oscar for Best Picture in 1981. If you haven't seen the movie, it's a great movie. It tells the story of Eric Liddell, basically, and his story of going through this experience of running and living for Christ and all these things. I want to do this. Again, I love movies. I'll show you. Well, this is one of my favorite movies. I'll show you the race where in this movie where it shows him winning the race. It's like a four-minute clip. So this is the clip from Chariots of Fire. Of
Final 400 meters. Taylor, États-Unis. Numéro 278.
Good luck. Don't expect I'll see you till after the race. What's the deal with this guy Liddell, coach? He a problem?
No problem. He's a flyer. He's had two races today already. He'll die. Just swing along, you guys, and wait. After 300 meters, rigor mortis sets in. You'll pull him in on a rope.
Johnson, Canada.
Good luck, Taylor. Watch out for a little. Coach says no problem. He's got something to prove, something personal. Something guys like Coach will never understand in a million years.
USA!
Says in the old book, he that honors me, I will honor. Good luck, Jackson Schultz. So where does the power come from to see the race to its end? From within. I believe God made me for a purpose. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure.
That movie, another movie for y'all to put on your list. Really good movie, worth watching. But you see, he won the 100 meters. He went back to England, national hero, very famous. He could have done anything he wanted, could have lived a really nice, easy life, and been a hero as an athlete in England. But the year after the Olympics in 1925, he fulfilled his promise, and he went to China to be a missionary. This is one of the last pictures we have of Eric Liddell in China. We all know in the 1940s, World War II, occurred, and Japan invaded China, and they interned a lot of the missionaries that were there. So Eric Little was captured and put in a Japanese internment camp in China in 1945. And a few months before the war end, he, because of sickness, died in the internment camp in China in 1945, only 43 years old, relatively young for his age. So he spent 20 years as a missionary. There's a great documentary showing the last years of his life, and you see that even in the internment camp where he was a prisoner, he taught youth Sunday school. He still cared for the children. He shared the gospel with as many people as he could. And in the end, right before the war ended, he died. So Eric Little, this great athlete, this Olympic champion, and yet we see the sacrifice that he made for Christ. When I look at the stories of these men and women like Eric Little, Lottie Moon, Hudson Taylor, especially as someone from a Chinese background with Chinese heritage, we really see these men and women, even though they weren't Chinese, the love they had in order to bring the gospel to the Chinese people. And a lot of the churches, a lot of the mission movements that we see today are because of the sacrifices of men and women like this. The last missionary couple I want to share, you all may have heard of them, is Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Let me tell you a little bit about their story. So Jim and Elizabeth Elliot, both born in the 1920s, they grew up not too far from here, a little farther north up in Portland, Oregon. And they both attended Bible school. They got married and they decided they wanted to go and give their life to missions. So the organization they were with decided to send them to Ecuador in South America. And they were going to be sent to these, it's called the Alcas Indians. They were this unreached tribe in the jungles in Ecuador. So him, his wife, the rest of their mission team spent 3 years training, learning the language, learning the culture, all these things, getting ready to make contact with this unreached group in the jungles in Ecuador. And finally decided they were ready. So Jim Elliot and four other men in their group decided that the time was ready to make contact. So they flew their plane, landed on the river, went in, and they made first contact with these Indians. The first day they were there, they were just on the beach waiting to meet them. Two women came out. It was a pleasant exchange. They gave them some food. Everything was good. They thought, okay, we're making inroads. But the day after that, I think it was 2 days after that, the two women came back, and behind them was a group of men with spears. And on that beach, they killed these five missionaries. The name of these five missionaries was Jim Elliott, Ed McCulley, Roger Uterin, Nate Saint, and Pete Fleming. When Jim was killed, Elizabeth was just pregnant with their daughter, and she lost her husband. You can see he didn't even live to 30 years old. He died at the age of 29. When these five American missionaries were killed, this became a global news. It was huge in the United States. Life magazine during that time, so Life magazine, today you think of Time magazine, Life magazine was the most famous magazine in the United States during that time, printed on the front cover the story about their death. And the title of the article was, "What a Waste." What a waste. These five young men with their whole lives in front of them killed. What a waste it was. But I think as followers of Jesus, we know, even though it was a tragedy, it was not a waste. Very famously, I want to show y'all this. I love this. Jim Elliot, this was 6 years before he died. While he was training to be a missionary, he kept a diary. So we have his diary today. They made it public after he died. And in his diary, while he was training to be a missionary, you can't see it, but this is his handwriting. Let me read this to you. He wrote this. "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose." I think the world said, what a waste. But for Jim Elliot and the missionaries, they knew it was not a waste. Even though, yes, he gave his life, Jim Elliot already knew, I can't even keep that, but I gain something eternal. So we see the martyr, the sacrifice he made. Now, the story doesn't end there, though, because him and these four men died. Their wives actually didn't give up. Elizabeth Elliot, I mentioned, she was pregnant with their daughter when Jim died. 2 years later, Elizabeth and the wives of the other missionaries that were killed, they decided, we're still going to go and try to share the gospel with this group. and they actually went in and they shared the gospel and they loved and ministered to the tribe that murdered their husbands. And they brought the gospel to them, and many, many of them became Christians. And this is a huge gospel movement through the jungles of Ecuador. Another good movie, I'm going to share a lot of good movies with y'all that y'all can watch. This movie, I don't know if y'all have seen it, it's called The End of the Spear. This is a movie about this story. It's focused on one of the other families and one of the sons that his dad was killed, Nate Saint. His dad was killed in this raid when the five men were killed, and how he and his mom went to these jungles and how he struggled with sharing the gospel. And he actually met the man that murdered his dad and shared the gospel with him. And this man became a follower of Jesus Christ. And it's just a really encouraging and amazing story that motivates us and shows us, even in the midst of great sacrifice, how we see the Lord working and how God is faithful through all these. So these are just the stories of some missionaries that we've seen in modern history, whether William Carey, Hudson Taylor, Lottie Moon, Eric Little, Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. And I just want to encourage y'all, we see their sacrifice, how they gave their life because of the hope they have. Remember, it's the hope we have in Christ leads us to sacrifice. Maybe some of you are thinking these stories are great and encouraging, but I'm not going to be a full-time missionary like them. My life, I'm not called. I don't have the ability to be like them, but that's okay. I'm not saying all of us have to live like them, but all of us have some sort of sacrifice. I think God is calling us today. Do y'all remember the parable of the talents that Jesus shared? I just want to spend a few minutes on this right now. You remember the parable of the talents where Jesus says, tells this story about this man representing God that went on a journey. And you remember he had three servants. And to one servant, he gave five talents or five bags of gold. To another, he gave two. And to another, you gave one. And you all know the story. The man with five talents did what? He put it to work. He gained another five. The man with two, he put it to work. He gained another two. But the man with one, this was the lazy servant, just dug it in a hole, buried it, and did nothing with it. And then we know the story goes on. Jesus, the master comes back. So God comes back and settles accounts with his servants. And you remember the man with the five bags of gold, the five talents, brought the other five. See, master, you gave me five, I have made five. And notice what the master replies. He says what? Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Now, the next servant comes, the one with the two bags of gold. And he says, master, you gave me two talents. I've gotten two more. And notice what the master says. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Exact same. He didn't say, well, you're two-fifths of what the person with five talents were. The person with five talents got five more. He got the reward from God. The person with two talents got two more. He got the reward from God. Of course, we know the man with one talent came. And what did he say? He said, I buried it. And then because of that, the master got mad and punished him. But I want to think about this story a different way. Imagine if the man with the one talent, with the one bag of gold, had done the same thing as the man with five and two and made another bag of gold. What do you think the master would have told him? I think the master would have said the exact same thing. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. I think one of the things this story is Jesus is trying to teach us is as followers, as workers, as as God's children in the kingdom with one life, one mission, our goal is not to be comparing ourselves with others, to be as successful as other people. Our goal is just to be faithful with what God has given us. So those missionaries that I shared, they were faithful in their lives with the abilities and the opportunities God has given us. But for us today, you have to be faithful, not to be like them, not to be like the other people in your church. Just be faithful with what God has given you. If God's given you five talents, use your five talents. If God's given you two talents, use your two. If God's given you one, use your one. God is not asking you to be like that one with five. God is just saying, are you going to be faithful with what I have given you? When we look at these great stories of missionaries throughout history, I think we see these amazing men and women of God and these very inspiring stories. But today, for us, we're also called to be like them, but exactly in the context God has given us. Going back to my theme again, knowing the hope we have in Jesus Christ empowers us to sacrifice for the sake of his mission. Knowing the hope that we have empowers us to sacrifice. So my question, my application for all this morning is this: what sacrifices is God asking you to make today? Probably it's not like William Carey or Hudson Taylor, where you leave your home to go to a different country to be a missionary. Although maybe someone here one day God will call to be a full-time cross-cultural missionary. And that is a great calling that God can give us. But what is God calling you today to sacrifice, to give? Could be something related to your money, your finances. Could be related to your time. Could be related to your literal talents that you have. How can you serve the church? How can you serve your brothers and sisters, serve your family? How can you be faithful with what God has given you? As we look at these different missionaries and see their faithfulness, again, my goal this morning is to encourage you all also to be faithful, not to be like them, but be faithful in what God has entrusted you with. Again, I mentioned yesterday, we have many different generations in this room, from middle school, high school, all the way to retirees. This may look different for everyone, but I know every one of you here has something that God is asking you to give up for him. Are you willing to do that for him? And I think one of the things we see is when we are willing to make sacrifices for God, even though sometimes we don't even understand or see it, God can do great things. The last story I want to share is, I've shared stories about these five different missionaries, and these are famous missionaries throughout church history. You probably have heard their names at one point or another, but I want to share this final story about this missionary couple that I guarantee most of you have never heard about, and that in history is not a famous missionary or anything like that. But I just want to share this story, and this story is just an amazing story of how God can use what we give for his kingdom. This is David and Svea Flood. And let me just share a little bit about their story. Their daughter's name is Aggie. This is a book you can find. I don't know if it's still in print. It was written like 50 years ago, but their story is written in this memoir in their book. So this was in 1921. So almost 100, over 100 years ago now. Over 100 in 1921. David and Svea, they were this young couple from Sweden in Europe. And they decided to give their lives to God, and they were going to go on missions and become full-time missionaries to Africa. So they decided to go to Africa. During that time, they went to this country called the Belgian Congo. Today, it's the nation of Zaire. It's called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Back then, it was called the Belgian Congo. So they joined a mission organization that sent them to Africa, to the Congo during this time. So it was them, and then they also went with this other missionary couple, the Ericsson. So the four of them decided to go to the Congo and do missions. And it was a difficult time. I can think about 1921, right? With travel, with technology, this would have been a very difficult trip for them, going from Europe to Africa. They get there, and they were supposed to go to this remote village in the Congo. And they get to the village, and they are going in, and they talk to the chief. And the chief basically says, "You're not allowed in here. I'm going to kick you out. Because if we allow you in here with your foreign god, it's going to anger our local gods." So basically, the chief did not allow them into the village, which they wanted to be in, to share the gospel and do their ministry. So because of that, they had to go live about 2 miles outside the village, and they built their own little mud huts, and they lived there. And they really had very little contact with the locals, even though they were there to share the gospel with them. The only contact they were allowed to have with, there was this little boy that the chief allowed twice a week to go and sell chickens and eggs to them so they could have food. So they would see this little boy twice a week. Besides for that, they really had no contact. Now, Svea decided, even though we don't have the best situation, I'm going to make the best of what I can. So when this little boy came twice a week, she started getting to know him, building a relationship with him, and she shared the gospel with him. And actually, this little boy became a Christian. So this was a very big joy for them, that this little boy became a Christian. But besides for that, nothing else went their way. Their entire ministry, nothing happened. Nothing worked out. There were no more spiritual breakthroughs. And even on top of no spiritual breakthroughs, they also were just racked with illness. During this time, of course, you can think about in Africa, they had a lot of malaria. So they kept getting sick with malaria and kept having a lot of close calls with sickness and death. It got to the point where they were there so long, and besides this little boy, there was no other spiritual breakthrough. The other missionary couple, the Ericksons, they gave up, and they decided, we're just going to go back to the mission headquarters and see if we can go to a different field. And David and Sveolo decided, no, we're going to stay. We want to keep trying, and we're going to see what happened. But it got to the point where still there was nothing happening, and then one day they found out that Sveo was pregnant. And she was pregnant, and she was going to give birth. So they convinced the chief to let them have a midwife from the village, and they gave birth to a daughter, whom they named Iana. A-I-N-A, Iana. But because of the sicknesses that they had, because Svea was already having a lot of bouts with malaria, her body couldn't handle the childbirth. So 17 days after she gave birth, she died. So Iana was born 17 days later. Her mom, Svea, died. And when Svea died, David, the father and husband, something snapped in him. He couldn't handle it. So what he did was he brought his newly born baby daughter back to the mission headquarters and was like, I can't do this. My wife is dead. I don't know what to do with this kid. So he left his daughter and gave it to the other missionary couple, the Ericksons, and says, I'm going back to Sweden. I don't want anything to do with God anymore. I don't want anything to do with this. God has abandoned us and our family. And he basically not only quit the mission, he lost his faith. And his daughter then was with this new missionary couple, the Ericksons. What happens was less than a year after the Ericksons adopted Iana, they also got sick and they died. So now Iana is 1 year old. So finally the mission agency decided to let her join an American family that was in America, and they adopted her. So she basically, by 3 years old, went to America and went to a family in America, never really knowing her parents and growing up in a Christian family in America. Now, I'm sharing this story. At this point, this seems like a really dark and grim story, right? Aina, when she went to America, her American parents took her name and changed it to Aggie. That's why her name is Aggie. So Aggie grew up in a Christian family. She ended up marrying another Christian. His name was Dewey Hurst. They went to a college in Minnesota. And eventually, they got to the point where her husband became the president of a Bible college in Seattle. And I think it's called Northwestern College. So they're growing old already. They already have children and everything. And she grows up in America, never knowing her family, knowing that her parents were missionaries and all these things. But one thing she found when she was in Seattle and her husband was the president of this Bible college, was there was this large Scandinavian heritage in Seattle. So I didn't know this either until I read this. But there's a lot of Swedish influence and all these things. So one day she came across a Swedish Christian magazine. And in this magazine, she just thought, oh, interesting, I have Swedish heritage. She just started flipping through it, and she couldn't read Swedish, but one thing caught her attention. One of the articles, she saw a picture, and it was about Africa, and on the picture was a grave, a tombstone, and on the tombstone was the name Svea Flood, her mother's name. And she sees this, and of course, she's like, that's my mom's name. What do I do? But she can't read Swedish, so this time there's no Google Translate, right? There's no AI or anything. So she finds someone in their college that speaks Swedish, and she says, translate this for me. What is this article saying? And the friend translated the article and said, basically, it's a story about this white missionaries that went to Africa, about this little girl that was born, but the mother had died, and how the missionaries left. And when all the white people had left, though, there was this one little boy that was a Christian. And when that boy grew up, he started a school. And he started a school and started sharing the gospel with all his students at his school. And his students at his school became Christians and shared the gospel with their parents. And eventually they shared the gospel with the village chief. And now in that village, there are 600 Christians in that village because of that little boy. And this was 30, 40 years later, right? They have no idea. So when Aggie heard this, thinking about knowing the story about her mother, obviously, this was a joyous occasion. By the way, the story doesn't end there. About 25 years after they had been married, for their anniversary, Aggie and Dewey decided to go back to their country of Sweden. So this was already, she was probably around 50 years old by then. She goes back to Sweden and she decides, I'm going to look for my father. Remember, her father had abandoned her. She had met her father. She had no memory of her father. Her father was in his 70s now. This was 50 years after they had left Africa. And she looks up her father and finds out her father had remarried and had four other children. And her father had abandoned God, had become an alcoholic, had struggled with alcohol all his life. He had just had a stroke. His health was really bad. He was in his 70s. But Aggie ended up finding her own family. She ended up meeting her half-brothers and sisters for the first time. It's a very happy reunion. And she was like, I want to talk to my father. I want to talk to my friend. They were like, yeah, sure, go talk to him. But they were like, just don't ever bring up God. In our life, whenever we ever talk about God, our father gets so angry and says, God has abandoned us, and I don't want anything to do with God. But Aggie was like, I still want to meet my father. So she ended up going and finding her father, David. And by then, I mentioned he's in his 70s. He was weak on the bed. And she, obviously, they don't know each other, but she says, Papa, I'm Ayana, your daughter. And her memoir writes that her father starts tearing up, says, Ayana, I'm so sorry. I never meant to give you up. I'm so sorry. And Aggie responds and tells him, it's okay. I don't hold it against you. God protected me. And when she said, God protected me, her father's face just changed. And he was like, no, God did not protect you. God abandoned us. You know, God let your mother die. God wasn't with us. Don't say anything about God. And then Aggie shared with her father, saying, no, Dad, you don't know. Let me share with you what happened. And she shares the story of how that little boy they had shared the gospel with became a Christian, grew up, and now there were 600 other Christians in that village. And when she shared that story with her dad, she said she saw this thing in her dad's eyes, her dad's heart slowly softened. And over the next few days, she spent time with her dad, just kept talking with him. And by the end of her trip, the story is that her dad had softened up and decided to give his life back to God. And she was able to leave knowing that her dad had forgiven God in the sense of what he had allowed to happen in their life. Just a few weeks after that trip, her father ended up dying because of his health. But before he died, his father also came back to the Lord. Story doesn't end there. We got one more part. Few years after this, again, Aggie now has gone home, right? She's with her husband. Because her husband is a president of a Bible college, they attend a lot of conferences. They went to a conference in London in the UK, and it was this global missions conference. And in this global missions conference, there were a lot of different presentations, a lot of different reports, and they did different reports on the state of the gospel in different countries. And one of the reports, this man stood up and he was the superintendent of the entire national church in the country of Zaire. And Zaire, again, was the Belgian Congo, the country that David and Sveir had gone to. And the superintendent of the national church in Zaire preached and shared about how right now there were 110,000 Christians, baptized believers in Zaire, and growing this great gospel movement spreading throughout the country. So when Aggie, sitting there, heard this presentation, she was like, oh, I really need to meet and talk to this man because he is the superintendent of the whole church in the country my parents went to. So after the message, in between, she goes and she finds the superintendent of this church, this man, and he doesn't speak English. He only speaks French, so they have a translator. And she shares with him, I thank you so much for your message. It's so encouraging. I just want to share, my name is Aggie. My parents were actually missionaries in the Congo, in your nation, 50 years ago. Their name was David and Sveya Flood. And this man, the superintendent of National Church, responds in French through a translator and says, I know your parents. Your mother shared the gospel with me when I sold her chicken and eggs when I was a boy. And now I have grown up and we have 110,000 Christians because of what your mother has done. He said, your mother is the most famous person in our church. And he invited her, you need to come to Africa and see the fruits of what your mother has done. And because of that, Aggie and her husband went to Africa, and they were able to actually go. And when they went, the entire village had a celebration celebrating her arrival. They saw her mother's tomb and Sveya Flood. That was the picture in the article she had seen years ago. And they saw all these things and celebrated the work of God. And that Sunday at that church in that village, because of Aggie's arrival, because of the sacrifice of her mother, they preached on this passage from our Lord Jesus. It says, very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. You do not know the impact your life will have on the kingdom. So praise God, share the good news, let the Holy Spirit empower your witness. One of the things as I close today, I want to see. I've read this story. I shared this story many times. Every time I share it, I'm in tears right now too, just remembering this. But we see this one sacrifice, sharing the gospel with this one little boy, and thinking it was all a failure, and then seeing how the Holy Spirit led it to 110,000 Christians and more. We don't know how the Spirit will work. It's not our job to know, but God is calling us to be faithful. So going back to my theme today, what is God calling you to sacrifice for his kingdom today? What can you give to this kingdom and let God take it and do amazing things? And remember, when we make sacrifices, the reason we are able to sacrifice, when we're hesitant because we know it will be costly, we remember we can do it because of the hope that we have. So as I share these stories of missionaries, as I share this final story, I hope this can encourage, inspire you to see how in your life today, in your church, at HOC 1, in your family, in your fellowships, what can you give to God today? Again, you do not know the impact your life will have on the kingdom. So just be faithful. Share the good news. Let the Holy Spirit empower your witness. Let's bow our heads again and close our eyes. I just want another just a minute to have a time of reflection. The worship team will come up here. We're going to respond with the song, I Surrender All, that we just sang. But right now, I just really want you to just take a moment. Take a moment and just think about, what is God asking you to surrender today? What is God asking you to give up for the sake of his kingdom? What sacrifice is God asking you to make? Again, maybe it's something related to your time. Maybe something related to money. Maybe something related to your talents. But what can you give up for the sake of God's kingdom? Not comparing it with what others are doing, but just giving up your 5 or your 2 or your 1 talent for the sake of the kingdom. And as you sacrifice, always remember, nothing you sacrifice can ever change the hope that you have in Jesus. The fact that everything will be okay. So let's take a minute. I want you just to go to God, reflect, and then I'll close in prayer, and then we'll respond with I Surrender. Heavenly Father, as we look at these amazing stories of your faithfulness throughout 2,000 years of church history, of how men and women have given up everything in order to live their life on one mission, let us be inspired and see, what are you calling us? How are you calling us to live our lives for you today? What sacrifices are you asking us to give today as we live our life on mission for you? Let us be encouraged knowing that whatever we sacrifice for you, we know that we already have a secure hope in your Son Jesus Christ and his return. And nothing that we sacrifice will be in vain. So I pray that we would commit our lives to you all over again. Renew our passion for you in whatever areas, in our family, in our homes, in our work, in our schools, in our church.